Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracies concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
It's so sick that we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America? America?
From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! But there is a fact about Kerry's past that brings him closer to Bush than any other candidate. Both Bush and Kerry are members of a secretive society dating back to their respective days at Yale University. It's called Skull and Bones. This fact has not been widely reported, but when Kerry's campaign spokesperson was asked about it, she said, quote, "John Kerry has absolutely nothing to say on that subject. Sorry."
You both were members of Skull and Bones, a secret society at Yale. What does that tell us?
Not much, because it's a secret.
Is there a secret handshake? Is there a secret code?
I wish there were something secret I could manifest.
322, secret number?
There are all kinds of secrets.
Although Bush was quoted as saying, and this was George Herbert Walker Bush, is that right, saying that women would be the downfall of Yale?
That's George W. Bush.
George W.
George W. Bush said in the 1980s, to a woman who was a graduate of Yale, that women would be the downfall of Yale. Yeah, I actually want to back way up and talk about, at least just mention exactly what Skull and Bones is, because while some people on the East Coast have heard about the society, other people across the country, you know, had no idea that we were looking right now, if the polls are correct, at what would be the first Skull and Bones versus Skull and Bones presidential election, which is pretty weird. Skull and Bones is America's most powerful secret society. It's based at Yale, where it's headquartered in a building called the Tomb, and Skull and Bones has included among its members presidents, including President George W. Bush and his father, as well as William Howard Taft, Supreme Court chief justices, CIA officials, cabinet members, congressmen, and senators. What makes it so staggering that we could have a Skull and Bones versus Skull and Bones, Kerry versus Bush election is that this is a tiny, tiny club. One of the interesting and I think disturbing things about Skull and Bones is that its purpose is to get members into positions of power and then to have those members hire other members into prestigious positions. This is something we have seen with George W. Bush since his ascendancy to the presidency. He's put several bonesmen in prestigious positions, such as Bill Donaldson, the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission, the number two and number three guy in the Justice Department, the guy who, coincidentally or not, puts out all of Bush's secrecy memos. He's an assistant attorney general, and he's a major bonesman. Bonesman Frederick Smith was reportedly Bush's top choice for Secretary of Defense until he had to withdraw from health care. The General Counsel of the Office of Homeland Security, the Secretary of Defense's representative to Europe. The list goes on and on and on. And that's something that's interesting because George W. Bush likes to feign his distance from Yale, from Bones, from Northeastern establishment elite connections, and yet he's going ahead and following the Skull and Bones to the letter. Well, there's loyalty, of course, to each other. They're supposed to call each other up, and I revealed the code words they use in my book, so I assume they've probably since changed them, but it used to be, "Do you know General Russell?" General Russell was the founder of Skull and Bones, and all a bonesman had to do was call up another bonesman, maybe even if they'd never even met before, and they would cough up money or connections or appliances.
It's so sick that so we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America? America? Number 322.
Does it still exist? I mean, the thing is so secret, but I'm not even sure it still exists.
Skull and Bones has been called the most powerful and elite club in the world. Others have seen the sinister signs of a conspiracy, a satanic society cloaked in secrecy that chooses who will be president. Warren Goldstein, a Yale graduate who now teaches history at the nearby University of Hartford, says conspiracy theories mask what Skull and Bones is really about.
The conspiracy that is there is the conspiracy that's really pointed to by Skull and Bones, if not actually represented by it. And that is the American conspiracy of class. Because the people who run for president, by and large, come from the highest reaches of the American establishment.
We always tend to think of America over here as a great classless society.
And that is a profound mistake.
Tell It Like It Is, Etta James, your own. Alexandra Robbins, the number.
That would be 322. So, according to Skull and Bones lore, and this is something that both Senator Kerry and President Bush would have learned, in 322 BC, the Greek orator Demosthenes died. When he died, the goddess Eulogia, bear with me here, I didn't make this up myself, the goddess Eulogia, whom Skull and Bones calls the goddess of eloquence, arose to the heavens and didn't happen to come back down again until 1832. She just happened to take up residence in the tomb of Skull and Bones. Now Skull and Bones does everything in deference to this goddess. They have songs, or they call them sacred anthems, that they sing about Eulogia when they are encouraged to go out and steal things from some remarkably valuable items, supposedly. They are said to be bringing back gifts to the goddess. They begin a session in the tomb by unveiling a gilt shrine to Eulogia, and that's basically just the point of the society. They call themselves the Knights of Eulogia. So that's where the number 322 comes in.
Well, Alexandra Robbins, you too are a member of a secret society at Yale. Now, can you explain what that is?
Sure. Well, I was a member ever since I was Anyway, the society is called the World Society. It's the second oldest society at Yale.
Why was John Kerry recruited?
One other thing interesting about Kerry that I wanted to mention is that both of his wives have been directly related to members of Skull and Bones, sister and daughter, which is another connection to Skull and Bones.
What about the induction ritual?
That's a weird one. It's sort of a cross between a Harry Potter novel and a haunted house. The heart of the ceremony that takes place in Skull and Bones' most sacred room, which now we know is probably called, called Room 322, which is also called the Inner Temple. And I did get a hold of the script for initiation, so I lay that out in my book. But to give you a little teaser, there is somebody dressed as the devil, somebody dressed as Don Quixote, somebody dressed as a pope who has one foot sheathed in a monogrammed white slipper that rests on a stone skull. And the other knights are dressed up as skeletons, and the alumni, or the patriarch, sort of line the halls and just to make as much noise as possible. In part of that ceremony, the neophytes stick the pope's foot, drink, quote-unquote, blood from the Yorick, which is a skull container, and the initiation ends with the initiated substance from Don Quixote. Sort of shrieking crowd falls silent, and Quixote taps the junior on the left shoulder with a sword.
The Peggy's come pretty close. She was part of a team that successfully recorded part of the initiation ceremony that takes place in the tomb's courtyard.
We only got to and to listen to the outdoor part. God only knows what went on indoors.
And what did you hear? What was it you know? You managed to get this unique...
They were pretending to murder people.
What was the tone of it, though? Was it jokey? Or was it
funny? No, it wasn't jokey at all. It was it's about the only way I can describe it. It was sick.
Get the phone now!
What you're hearing is the first recording ever made of the Skull and Bones initiation ceremony. It has never been broadcast before. The club has what some might see as a strange fascination with death, skulls and bones. There's the chant too, difficult to hear first of all, but including the devil equals death, the death equals death.
They were pretending to murder people.
And let me ask you, one of the first articles you wrote about skulls and bones elicited an unexpected response and threat to you as well. Could you talk about it?
However, after the article came out, I got a call at my office from a New Yorker from a journalist whom I knew by name, to be a member of Skull and Bones, and he scolded me for writing the article. He said, I'm quoting, writing that article was not an ethical or honorable way to make a decent living in journalism. Then he asked me how much I had been paid for the story. I, of course, refused to tell him, and he hung up on me. 15 minutes later, he called back. And he says, "I've just gotten off the phone with our people." And I laughed. I knew who meant other bones, but I laughed because I probably would actually say our people. And he told me that the society demanded to know where I got my information. I wouldn't tell him this, of course. And then he spent the next 15 minutes or so berating me for writing about going on, for having the gall to expose something about his secret society. And he ended the conversation by saying, "There are a lot of us at newspapers and at political journalism institutions across the country. Good luck with your career." They slammed down the phone. I was 23 then. I was an aspiring investigative reporter, so that did shake me a little bit. But what really appalled me was that I found out since that in the years since that call, this guy has been actively going out trying to destroy my career as a journalist, simply because I wrote about Skull and Bones.
Let us look at Northern California. You understand?
Yeah.
You know what's happened since
San Francisco just gone.
It's clear over. I don't know, but it isn't just down in the ratty part of town.
Now,
but the upper class in San Francisco is that way. The Bohemian Grove that I attend from time to time, the Easterners and the others that come there, but it is the most faggot goddamn thing you will ever can ever imagine in San Francisco, right? Because it's just terrible. I can always shake hands with anybody in San Francisco.
Really? Well, it's a different set of values that has been induced into that.
I welcome this kind of examination because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order. Out of these troubled times, our fifth objective, a new world order, can emerge. Now we can see a new world coming into view, a world in which there is a very real prospect of a new world order.
It's so simple we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.